the foundation.
Good evening, everyone. So first and foremost, I would like to invite all of the young global leaders that we are working with and that have helped us to put this wonderful evening together. I would like to invite them to join me on stage. Please, young global leaders, please. Israel, Linda, one more time. There's like 20 of you. One time. Hector. Anyone else? Who are the other one? Where are the other one? How did you go like from 20 to 5? Okay. So, I would like to bring also on stage a young man. I had a deal with him at the beginning of the evening. He didn't want to give me a kiss, but he gave me a fist. That's a beginning. I would like to invite Archer to join me on stage, please. Let's give him a round of applause. So, the reason I asked Archer to join me is because when I was a young man, I wish that people would tell me that being successful is actually being under the critics. What do I mean? I would like to share a story, very personal story. My father, when I was younger, my parents are very hardworking people. We actually have restaurants in France, that's our business. So we work really, really hard, and fortunately, thanks God, things are going well. And when I was 11 years old, at school, one of the kids comes to me and says, "Hey, yeah, can I speak to you?" "Sure, what's up?" "Is it true? I heard at home that your father is an arm dealer." "An arm dealer? Okay. Well, then I go, "No, he works every day, 7 days a week at the restaurant. No, we're not the arm dealers." "Oh, okay, that's what my parents were saying." "Okay, fine." Then the next thing is like I'm about 14 years old. Another kid comes to me and say like, "Hey, Tony, yeah, what's up? Is it true your father is selling drugs?" "Drugs." And then I tell him like, "No, he's every day at the restaurant and they can see him." And the reason of that is because when you're different, and I think that's what Thomas was saying in his speech, when you're different, it raises curiosity. You raise curiosity. Excuse me, people at the back, can you hear me?
Yes?
Yes? Thank you. Can you listen to me? Thank you. God bless. So, basically, the moral of that story was like, at the time, I was very hurt by people's word, kids, that I mean, their parents and themselves feeling that we couldn't be just successful by our labor. And that just gave me so much respect towards my parents. And it was hard to understand it at the time. But now that, you know, I'm an adult, or supposed to be, I realize that actually it's being under critics is actually raising criticism is actually something where I thought you were doing something bad, but no, actually it's the opposite. You're actually doing something good. When people criticize you, is actually, you know, tonight, to be fairly honest to all of you and to be completely transparent about that, and I really want to emphasize on that, I was thinking to actually present my resignation tonight, but I will not. And the reason that I will not is because I came to that conclusion that when people say things about you, such as "you're mafia," "you are doing drugs," "you are a bad person," then, you know, I thought, damn, maybe I'm doing something bad. And then I look at tonight, I see all of those wonderful people, Leah, Thomas, beautiful couple, helping each other, you know, loving each other, perfect balance in the relationship. And then there is a relation between Jim and I. Straight man and a gay man. Well, we are managed somehow to support each other, and the work that we're doing is just incredible. I would like to give him a special dedication to thank him for everything that he has done for me, for the platform. Yeah, a round of applause. When you are different, it's very difficult for people to understand you. It's very difficult for people to also give you a chance. So when they do, it's something that you have to be grateful for. In life, very few people are grateful. And through my speech that I didn't write, as you can notice, what I'm trying to say is I would like to thank every single person that is part of this evening, that I put this evening together. And especially I would like to give a big round of applause and introduce Jim Luce for his final remarks. Thank you very much to all of you, and I hope you had a good evening and you're going to continue to have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
And then my keynote address, which if I read it, it's 5 minutes, but I can just tell you what it said, and that's 3 minutes, so that'll be much better. So, first off, presidential remarks. Tony came to us. He was already running a concept of a project, which is becoming a real project, called Les Sommets de la Femme. It will be the first Francophonie women's project, also in English, at the United Nations, talking about women's empowerment. And one of the things that really impressed me about Tony was his commitment to gender issues and empowerment. And we have taken that on as a project for the foundation. And I encourage you all to talk to Tony and get to know more about Les Sommets de la Femme. It's an incredible project, and we endorse it very, very much. Tonight, I would like to tell you a little bit more about our funds as we're stepping up. I want to have Ariel Wilmot come up, who gets funds from very, very small at this point, but from the Bauer Fund. Bill Bauer, Dr. William Bauer, from Marietta College, where I grew up, 2 years ago called me and let me know that his 23-year-old son had committed suicide. But he didn't say it was suicide at first. He said that his son had shot himself at 2 in the morning, and it absolutely wasn't suicide. And I talked to him, and I talked to him, and I talked to him, and he was in such pain. He'd said goodnight to his son. His son was in a good mood. His son had plans for the next day. And then they really thought it was a hunting accident, a gun cleaning accident of some sort. But a year later, he called me in tears and he said, I've really accepted that my son took his life. And what should I do with the rest of my life? And I said, well, Bill, I don't know what to tell you, but your kid's my kid's age. And if I lost my kid, I would want that loss to mean something. And why don't we conceptualize a fund where you're supporting suicide prevention initiatives and then mental health initiatives that would help make a difference in our youth? And he said, well, let's do it. And Ariel Wilmot is the head of Fountain House Gallery. Fountain House is, hopefully you all know Fountain House. Fountain House is the premier institution in New York City working with New Yorkers with mental illness. And if you've ever ridden in the subway, you've noticed that there's a few of us living with mental illness in New York City. But anyway, Fountain House does incredible things, and they have an arts program. And Ariel, come up and tell us a little bit about what the Bauer Fund has done in a very, very little way, because we're at the very beginning stage, but we'll grow to do.
Thank you so much, Jim. And thank you to the Bauer Fund. It's an honor to receive this even small amount of money. Everything helps. Fountain House has been around since 1946, and as Jim mentioned, we're leading the innovation and serving those living with mental illness. In New York City, we serve 1,300 people on a regular basis. They come to our clubhouse. And it's a community, it's placemaking, it's a place for them to go when they don't have a place to be. It's non-clinical, so it's really accepting you for what you can contribute to the world as opposed to treating you for your illness first. And I run the gallery, which is on 48th and 9th. It's open to the public. You can come there any day and see the artwork that's made by members of our community and be moved by the beautiful, creative contribution that they can make to this world. It's about reducing the stigma around mental illness and just making people aware that, you know, even if you are living with mental illness, you have something to contribute and you have a place to be and, you know, a reason to live. So I'm really proud to be a part of that organization and to receive this from Jim. And we're so grateful for his friendship, as I'm sure everybody in this room has felt his warmth and his generosity. And, you know, for many, many more years of his, you know, beautiful presence in this world, helping all of us do what we do and make the world a better place. So thank you. Have a good night.
Georgia Nomikos, let's talk about the Hellenic Fund. Come on up. And also, we have an award that we haven't given out, our last award. It happens to be a Greek award, so I need some help with this.
A Hellenic award.
A Hellenic award, I'm so sorry. There's actually a big difference. It's a Hellenic
very
award.
Very big difference.
Big difference. So, should I read parts of it?
Yes.
Okay. So this is, okay. Thank you, that was the part I was stumbling on. A sound manager, stagehand, theater production director, and producer. Whereas Christos is a partner and producer of the first largest and most unique theatrical company in Greece from 1999 until today, whereas he has been has expertise in all theater production related positions, sound manager, stagehand, theater production and direction, he is today a producer, and producing 200 theater productions with great success at the box office, where he has collaborated with the artistic producer of the Orpheus Luxury Collection, a high-end company based in New York City, in the orchestration and direction of their exclusive private events. And of course, he has participated in our cultural events and been of enormous support to the J. Lewis Foundation. He is therefore named the James J. Dudley Lewis Foundation, my parents had a great sense of humor, Hellenic Theater and Arts Award, presented to you, Christos. Congratulations so much.
Before Christos says something, we need to acknowledge how important theater, music, and all the arts are in our lives. Without that, we are dead. And as a Hellene woman, I would like to thank Christos for honoring the daughters of Zeus and Mnemosyne, the divine muses, for his great contribution to Hellenic theater and the arts. Congratulations and thank you.
I thank you very much, and Georgia, and you. Thank you so much for giving me that award. I'm very emotionally covered and experienced it. I'm sorry for you. I just want to thank you and congratulations.
Thank the Academy, please.
Thank you.
Well, together with Jim Roos, for Open International Worldwide. I try to make better adults from the child of 3 years old. And the reason why I chose this orphanage is the education of communication and the courage to communicate with others, and also very important thing is the compassion. Others before self. This was actually Dalai Lama's teaching, but we had it in Japan, we kind of lost it, because when it came, the Fukushima disaster, they came back. When I look maybe younger, but I was 5, 6 years old when World War II was going on. Those days we had this kind of feeling, others before self. And education nowadays is going much too far from the happiness is money. That's not true. Happiness is not money. Happiness is not the fame. It is happiness comes from caring for others. And this orphanage in the Himalayas, they have nothing, practically nothing, but as I said, 3 years old knows how to be happy to be thinking for others before yourself. And then they all went to the university and they are becoming such, only 18 children has graduated finally. And because it started, school started in 1998, from the kids on the street came down from Chinese invasion, and the Indian army helped them to keep this village a pure Tibetan village. And then they became such a great adults, 18 years old. They all studying in the university. And I think something like this has to happen all over the world, in orphanage or any other institutions. And I'm going to make many of these schools with Jim together. Thank you very much.
Mentioned that Jeannie and Mash is not here with the Tree Water Endowment Fund, but a year ago, Jeannie, who I went to high school with, I never realized that she was my first Palestinian friend, that her mother and my mother were friends, and we knew each other socially, and I knew that there was something weird, but growing up in Ohio, I didn't really know what that was, and it was Palestinian. And she called me up this summer, she tracked me down through Facebook 40 years after high school graduation, my math's bad, it's 77, I think that's 40 years, and said, my grandfather's passed away and he's left a great deal of money, and I would like to have some sort of fund through your foundation to create 10,000 trees planted on the Israeli-Palestinian border, with Israeli children on one side planting them and Palestinian children on the other, and having the trees grow up together, and can we do that through your foundation? I said, well, it's not exactly what we do, but what the hell, it sounds pretty cool, let's do it. And so she's over there doing it, so she's not here tonight, so you'll have to meet her next year. And then we have another kind of cool thing. How many of you have ever heard of Mongolian American Cultural Centers in New Jersey? When I met this guy, come stand with me though during the video. I don't stand here by myself. I need a big, strong man beside me. Please, a big, strong man.
We're gonna share a video first. Can you play the video, please?
So when I first met Naran, he started telling me about his dream, and I'm like, wow, you know, I really know much about Mongolia. But he's passionate about getting back to his people, and passion is like a really, really hot commodity in my book, and so I'm like, let's do something together, and here we are.
Lights.
Lights, please.
swamped me, probably about 3,000 to 5,000 people total. And the more time goes on, the more that we get assimilated and we lose our identity in our culture. And time is very important that we have this project fulfilled to bring back the identity, the losing. Eventually we'll just be a face with no identity behind it. Mountains. And this one area where we stayed, we've been ever since. Late 51, early 52, we immigrated here to Howell, New Jersey, and we built our first Buddhist temple in America, first Tibetan Buddhist temple in America. 1967, I was born. First generation Catholic American, so I spoke only Mongolian for the first 7 years. I believe when I went to kindergarten or first grade, majority of the language I was speaking was Mongolian to all my friends, and nobody knew what I was speaking about. That was the start of my incarnation of my Mongolian culture, language, tradition, and dedication of wanting to keep and make aware of who we are, where we came from, our history, our culture, and our language. The challenge of myself and of our community is like the same challenge that any community has in America, especially a small community like us. Assimilation is a very big factor in losing your identity, losing your culture here in America, because everybody wants to be American, everybody wants to have a great career, and that career is determined about how Americans are, how well we speak English. The challenge is to keep our culture alive. The challenge is to keep our traditions alive, our language, our song and dance, our food. And I think with everybody's help, we can make that happen.
Yes.